This is a Glass Box Media podcast.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to This Week in Travel. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Gary is out and about. We don't know. We don't really care either. And Jen is here, though, coming to us from a hotel room someplace in Southern California.
Yes, I am at the Hotel Irvine. I was asked to come here for their block party. The hotel has recently been revamped, and I am shocked at how much I love it. I'm definitely coming back. Can I tell you
and what's a block party at a hotel?
It means they invite bands and local vendors who contribute to their marketplace, and they have lawn games. We're going to be playing cornhole and lawn bowling and music and a bit of festivities.
Excellent. And would you care to introduce our guest this week?
Yes, we are so lucky to have Captain and Clark with us. Welcome Chris and Tawny to our show for the very first time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So excited.
And where are you coming to us from right now?
We are hailing from our apartment nestled in the heart of Tacoma, Washington.
Currently in between trips. We just got off the plane from Hawaii, and in a couple days we're going to get on our way to Europe.
Excellent. Tacoma, the city in the United States with the highest rate of suicide. But other than that...
Oh my God!
That can't be right.
Is that true?
Actually true. But there are other things going on in the world, and some of them involve strange goings-on. I don't know whether you have seen this on your travels, Chris and Tawny, but there was a story that we have that's coming out of the Globe and Mail titled Sex at the Pyramids, Bare Butts at Angkor Wat, What's Going On? Apparently, there's been quite a few, the term that was used in the article was buffoons. There's quite a bit of buffoonery that's going on your travels here. Two 20-some American women could have faced serious consequences for carving their initials into the Colosseum in Rome. A Russian woman is in hot water for filming sex scenes at the Great Pyramids, which they're really fond of that in a Muslim culture, I should point that out. And then three French men and two American women have run afoul of authorities in Cambodia for stripping down to take naked photos at Angkor Wat. Is it something in the water? Is it some announcement that I missed? What the hell is going on with travelers these days?
You know, I think the problem is this has always happened. Like, people have always kind of been buffoons, if you will. Mm-hmm. But now they're documenting it.
Right.
Yeah, the saturation of social media has hit an all-time high.
When the one about the Russian women filming sex scenes at the Great Pyramid reminded me, because I'm just back from Morocco, where we were doing an amateur traveler trip. So we had friends, family, and five different listeners of the Amateur Traveler. And two of the listeners, a couple, were up at a homestay in the High Atlas Mountains, and they went to take a selfie. And it was them with the beautiful snow-capped mountains in the background, and they went to kiss, and our guide was like, no, 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 no. We don't do that here. This is somebody who grew up in the High Atlas Mountains and has never seen his parents hold hands or kiss. It's just inappropriate. So you can imagine, you can imagine that filming sex scenes at the pyramid is probably... not
a whole new level
sensitive. Yeah.
Okay, not culturally sensitive, but doesn't it kind of make you want to sneak and get away with something? Because when I read that, I thought, it takes the Mile High Club to a new level, right? You're sneaking around, you're doing something you're not supposed to do. Just don't put it on Instagram.
For those people who are not watching the video version of the show while Jen's speaking to us. Her daughter is sitting behind her, so they're going to be having an interesting conversation later on. Her daughter can't hear me speak because I'm in her earbuds, but Mommy, What's the Mile High Club will be an interesting conversation for some time later on this afternoon. And I believe we now have the title of the show.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and interject. I'm just going to say, I mean, there's a huge difference between like sneaking away to the third floor library during college and then like the pyramids. It just doesn't seem
yeah.
I mean, if you're going for exhibitionism, there's so many more comfortable places to go.
Without a dust storm.
Camels. Camels aren't romantic.
And the consequences in some of these places, you know, like you've heard about tourists getting arrested in Dubai.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's
it seems unwise.
Yeah, some of these people will probably be facing facing prison time. It's a serious offense, especially like carving your initials in the Colosseum. I mean, how stupid is that? But anyway. But speaking of stupid. I particularly enjoy this, and Jen wondered whether this is a story that I actually wanted to do because there's a video, and we won't be playing the video because it's all visual, but it is called Crap Advisors, General Reviews on TripAdvisor, and I did enjoy these, and these are actual reviews. You can go find them on TripAdvisor, and they are things like, let's find a sampling here, Niagara Falls... I won't read that one. But this place was packed with foreigners who always walked into our pictures in the middle of taking them. That's of course every place I've been. What was the first one? Niagara Falls is boring and quite possibly the most boring thing you could do. That comes from United 737, which is a TripAdvisor user. For the Colosseum, we get Barry G telling us most overrated building in the world. But we did get the helpful suggestion from who was it? From RIOK, if they had holographic 3D gladiator shows or something, sure. So that is something the Colosseum may have to think about.
What was the one with the Statue of Liberty where they said we didn't even get off the boat?
We didn't even bother getting off the ferry. So boring.
Yes, The one at the Colosseum that said, "This monument is in a poor state of repair."
Solid advice.
Solid advice, yeah. Actually, they should have seen it in the 1800s or so when it was just completely overgrown. But, you know, you'll have this. This is a true story also. Apparently, I have a cousin one time, one of my father's cousins, who was a corn farmer from Nebraska, who drove to the Grand Canyon, looked in the Grand Canyon at that, what I would say was a magnificent scenery, I would say that very poorly apparently, and said, "Yep, you sure can't grow corn there."
Again, sagacious.
not at all untrue, I should point out. It is not the best spot for corn growing. But it really does point to something, and I've heard Steve Coffer from TripAdvisor talk about the way you deal with TripAdvisor reviews is you throw out the best and the worst, you know, for hotels, for instance. I do find that the hotel reviews for me are more useful than the advice of where to go. If you look at the best thing to do in San Francisco, any guess? What would you recommend to your friends, the number one thing they should do if they go to San Francisco?
Go across Golden Gate Bridge.
It is the Segway tour, if you look
you
at the
hotel reviews.
No, I kid you not. And we talk about that at TripAdvisor. You know, it just gets good reviews. It's somebody who says to their people, "Hey, did you have a good time?" "Yes, then go give us a review." And so you do have to take those things with a grain of salt. I don't think it's untrue that if you want to do a Segway tour, apparently people like it. But I wouldn't say that that counts as the number one thing you should do when you go to town. So.
Yeah. Oh.
Well.
But perhaps the number one thing you should do in some cities, I thought this was a bizarre story. It comes from Boredom Therapy, which is one of the best websites that I have come across. There is an artist who is hiding around the globe, wasn't it? Isn't that the way the story goes?
Yeah.
USB devices that are kind of built into walls and things like that that you can go hook up your device to, your laptop, and what's the story? It's basically almost like a geocache, right?
Oh, wow.
Exactly. Yeah. We were wondering, like, how he, because if you look at the pictures, they're, like, in, like, brick and mortar, like, buildings. So does he just, like, carry cement with him all the time?
Because you'd have to, like, chisel out a space.
You would.
Put it in the USB drive and then, like, re-mortar it in.
Or at least find a space that has been previously chiseled out. But, yeah, he must carry around with him.
Right.
So that was the first thing you thought of. The first thing I thought of is, you know, you could get a virus from putting a foreign USB device into your drive.
That is the first thing
just
I thought
of. Just the visual metaphor of that alone is enough. You shouldn't go putting random pegs into your ports around the world.
We're still talking
about this. Yes, this is unprotected USBing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Filthy.
But what do you get to see if you use it?
Did it fit?
We don't know.
It didn't fit.
I don't know.
We're not sure if this where we heard this, but I think we were reading somewhere that it's part of like some grand treasure hunt. Like
right.
There are clues in each of them.
But
that could be.
There's basically a README file on the USB device telling you how the project works.
But here's the scary thing. They're called dead drops. So you can follow him on Twitter @dead_drops.
Right.
Dead drops is an anonymous offline peer-to-peer file sharing network in public space. USB flash drives are embedded into walls, buildings, and curbs. Access. Interesting. So the website is deaddrops.com as well.
But it reminded me of geocaching. Have you guys ever done geocaching?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have.
It's something fun. It's something that I wasn't as interested in until I was in Iceland last October. I was actually there. Nomadic Matt happened to be there at the same time, and we went out with a couple people who read his blog and somebody he met up on Couchsurfing who offered to be our tour guide for a day, and that guy was really into geocaching, so we stopped at a few places that day, and then he actually took me out for two more days, and it was interesting. It is one of those things, I sort of get it more now that I've been with somebody who is looking for that hidden cache of information, and you know, you get to be the one who knows that there is a secret USB at the base of the Brooklyn Bridge and no one else knows. So there's an attraction there, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets you out. It's adds a level of intrigue to daily life, so I like that about it.
Yeah, and I like finding clever ways to leave your own mark in the cache. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think I'd be intrigued by this. I don't know if I would insert the USB in any of my ports, but...
So to speak.
Speaking of leave...
yeah.
Speaking of leave your mark, what have Captain and Clark been up to recently, and where have you been leaving your mark?
We just got back from almost 2 weeks in Hawaii. I have family on Oahu, so we spent time there, and then we had our annual Expedia Viewfinder Summit on Maui, and we got back on Tuesday maybe?
Tuesday or Wednesday, we're not sure.
Yeah.
And what do you do with the annual Expedia Viewfinder Summit?
Oh, we do lots of things, but a lot of it is just hanging out with each other and exchanging ideas and preparing for the next year. And kind of rallying around each other.
Yeah, it's sort of our state of the union.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that everybody knows the program, but basically this is a program of a dozen or so bloggers that Expedia is working with for content creation.
Expedia just, 2 years ago launched their own
Expedia
Viewfinder
blog. Yeah, so this is every year we get together and launch the new year, so we're going into our third year.
Yeah.
And how does one get a gig like working with the largest travel company in the world?
That is an excellent question.
You know, we've been very fortunate in that they sought us out, and they have a very unique core group of people, and it's, you know, I think it's so clever of them. They didn't base it solely on numbers, but they chose people to fit different niches, and it's been fun to see the program grow over the years and see the content that comes out of it.
What's your favorite part about being a viewfinder?
You know, it's for me, it's the authentic partnership of the whole thing. We were a little wary when we were approached by a major corporation in the beginning, but from the start, all they've wanted is to use our authenticity and our genuine voice to make a sincere connection with their customer base.
Yeah, I think that's been the best part, is that we get to be us. We don't have to kind of mold ourselves into something we're not.
So it's been very symbiotic. We've really enjoyed that.
I have a fondness for Expedia. I worked for them for a while when I was first a TripAdvisor. So,
tell us how it works. Do they send you to a location, or do you just document your travels wherever you guys are already going on your blog?
It's a lot of the latter, where, you know, we will pitch different articles or topics that we want to write about, and so it's a great way to turn to monetize press trips for us. Mm-hmm. But also, there are a few cases where they give us the opportunity to choose where we want to go. So last year, they did the big storybook campaign, where we went with Kent and Kanan from No Vacation Required to Costa Brava and got to explore and document it on Expedia. And then we are launching something new this year that we're very excited about, where we literally got to draw
a destination out of a hat, and then we're going to go cover activities to do in that destination.
Yeah. Wow. It was awesome. It was like an Oprah moment.
It's like, you get a car, and you get a car.
You didn't draw Tacoma, though, right?
We did not draw Tacoma.
No.
Because that would have been...
We're on our way to Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Exciting. So was that part of the summit? Did you do your drawing from... while you were at the summit for your trip this year, or was that planned last year?
Yeah.
No, that was this year. That was at the summit.
We just found out.
And did you know what destinations were in the hat?
We had no idea.
So for those of you listening, it looks like Chris and Tawny are in an actual house. Is this a is this a stable place that you where you keep your belongings, or is it a parent's home, or is it a friend's home, or are you at an Airbnb?
No, this is our place. Yeah, we rent an apartment in Tacoma where we like come back to regroup, recollect before we launch out again.
Which is hilarious, because before we got married and before we got this apartment, we were very much nomads, but like.
Which
we
means living with our parents.
Living with our parents when we are on the road. But we love having this place that's our own. Like, we come back from a trip, and we hole up. We don't go outside for days.
No. We order food, and we use our own espresso machine, and we don't leave.
And it feels like a treat, doesn't it?
It feels like a treat, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It's almost like a vacation for us.
Yeah.
You know?
It's counterintuitive, because, you know, we'll go to Europe and have the best time, but then we're like, we should take a vacation. Maybe the living room? That could book us an accommodation in the hallway?
So how many days or weeks will you be traveling this year in 2015?
I'm guessing that it's going to be probably split. We'll probably do a total of maybe 6 months out and 6 months at home. We're coming up on what's normally like our quiet season, so I want to say like June through end of August we are normally home, and then it picks up again travel-wise. So we're planning on enjoying it while we're here.
Yeah.
It's interesting that way, because I think this is also the quiet season for me too, but if you think about it, it makes sense, because a lot of the destinations, this is their peak season, and they really don't need to be giving away travel during their peak season. They can make more money. They can bring in the travel writers or bloggers or whatever in the shoulder seasons and, you know, still have them have something interesting to write about. So it's funny how things tend to wind down a bit here, especially in the heat of the summer.
And because I have a kid, this is the exact opposite. We just got back from spring break. I'm looking to go away again as soon as we get out of school. Actually, we're leaving school early and we're going to Italy.
So this
is peak for us.
Excellent. And where are you going, Italy, Jen?
I've got a family, I wouldn't call it a reunion. It's more of like a family vacation at a villa in Siena.
Oh, wonderful.
And so we'll just do little day trips from around there. I've already been, but I think some of my family hasn't. But we are flying into Rome, and I haven't been there. So I will go look for the N and the L in the Colosseum.
Yes.
It's still there.
Oh, my gosh.
There might be some USBs around the area.
Yeah, search them out.
And then we'll probably just go visit some friends up in London to cap on to this, since we're going all the way over there.
Awesome.
Got to go visit the friends, too.
Tuesday, I'm flying to Spain, and that will be my fifth continent since February, so it's been a little crazy.
Holy cow.
Man. Well done.
Well, I first got introduced to Captain and Clark at T-Bex in Greece. And so you all are going back to Spain for that as well, right? You're going to be speaking at T-Bex in Costa Brava in just next week, right?
You're talking about everything.
We're missing T-Bex.
Yeah.
Oh, you are?
Year. Well, I mean, we're going. Yeah, we're missing it by just a few days. But we are actually flying into Barcelona on Friday.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
We're just using it as a...
I know, crazy.
We got a press trip in the Baltic.
I think I saw you on their speaker list.
Well, that's going to be an awkward
session. Oh, surprise!
I think I check. Did, because I looked at T-Bex Europe, and I'm like, oh, what speakers can we talk to this week right before T-Bex? And I was like, oh, Captain and Clark, I've been talking to them a bunch lately. And I was like, let's ask them. So unless they're in the speaker list. Maybe you're a
I'm
surprise.
I'm going to look it up right now.
To the surprise best of our knowledge, we're not next.
Oops.
Oops.
Leave it to Jen. But anyways, that's when I met you last year, and I was super excited to see you testing out Meerkat and Periscope recently, because everybody knows that has been my recent obsession. And then I saw that you were periscoping from this amazing villa in Hawaii. Do you want to tell us where you guys were staying there?
Oh, yeah. So you want to...
Yeah. Well, we are at the Grand Wailea property, but the Wailea has a whole section of villas called the Ho'olei, and they're ridiculous. I believe they're 4,000 square feet on average.
Yeah.
And it's nuts. It had an elevator, three bedrooms, and like this retractable wall that was like a space door. Like it would just connect your patio to the entire house.
And it was incredible. And that's actually where some of us stayed during the summit. So we shared that villa with Kent and Kanan, and we had others next to us. It was kind of like a little block party.
Like a commune.
Or a commune if we want to be creepy about it. But it was a great like place for us to kind of relax, and we had a lot of our meetings in our villa.
Yeah.
In just an awesome setting.
So it was very periscopable.
Yes, we had to periscope that.
Tell us who the other bloggers are there that are part of the viewfinder.
Ooh, you're testing us. Let's do.
Here we go. So you've got.
I'll fill in the ones that I don't hear about.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Whew.
No hard feelings if we forget you. No Vacation Required, Kent and Kanan.
Midlife Road Trip, Rick and Sandy.
Carol Kane from Girl Gone Travel.
Kara from the Vacation Gals.
Kara Williams.
And then we have, Kate Thomas from Travel with Kate.
Beth Whitman from Wanderlust and Lipstick.
Yes, we have Trish Friesen from Trip Styler. Okay.
And Taylor Hartzell from Hip Travel Mama. Dave and Deb from The Planet D.
Okay. Wait.
Chris and Tawny from Captain Clark.
Matt Villano.
And did you already get Carol?
I've got Matt.
Matt Villano.
Carol. We got Carol. Is that everybody?
Well, Spencer dropped. Spencer Spellman recently.
Yeah, yes. Spencer. Spencer is out doing his own thing that involves lots of delicious-looking beverages.
And sunsets.
So
he's got a niche.
Yeah, we're happy for him. We miss him, but he's doing great things.
So that's very female heavy.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. We were thinking about that the other day.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked out that way. It definitely did.
But I bet you like it.
Yes, is my political answer.
That's.
It's both effortless and rejuvenating.
Good answer.
Chris, are you with us?
I am with you. I seem to have dropped off the internet briefly. It sounded like when you were describing the place, the 4,000 square foot, palace that you were in, it was almost exactly the same as the tent I was in the Sahara, except that one was a lot smaller and smelled of wet sheep. But other than that, it sounded really similar.
Your tent had an elevator, I presume.
Right?
Except for the elevator, too. That was different, yeah.
Okay. Minor differences.
Minor differences.
We hardly use the elevator.
So what kind of? So you've got Barcelona next. What kind of activities are we going to be blogging about?
So here's the thing with Barcelona. We actually decided to fly there just so we could get, I guess, acclimated to the time change. And we knew that there were going to be a bunch of our friends in Barcelona or Costa Brava for TPEX. So we're only there for 2 days. But after that, we're going on this big 10-day tour through the Baltics,
which is super exciting. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia.
And we're stoked because we were in Estonia for a few days in January, and we kind of fell in love with at least Tallinn.
Oh, yeah.
So we're excited to go back.
And then we have some video projects coming up. We are working with Luxembourg, promoting some stuff for them, and kind of dovetailing off of the video course we just finished. So.
And then it's a big Europe campaign, and we're going to end with a 2-week trip through Italy with your rail.
Wow. Terrific. Tell us about.
It's going to be.
Tell us about this video program. You're doing online courses?
Yes. So the guys over at travelblogsuccess.com approached me not long ago and asked me if I'd be willing to put together an introduction to video for the travel blogger course. I think is the best way to say it. And I agreed. And then that was just concluded. I'm still making some renovations to it. But that's live now, travelblogsuccess.com, and it's everything that I wish I had known from the start, sort of condensed down into an easy-to-follow format.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely aimed towards beginners, people that are just jumping onto video. But it's been helpful for me because Chris does all the editing, and I don't even touch that stuff, but I've been able to learn a lot from taking the course, which has been exciting.
Is it archived? Could people still access it now? Is it sort of like on demand, you pay your money and you get access to the training, or was it live and it's over with?
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's the thing. So you buy the course and then you have access to it forever. So you can go through the lessons at your pace, and then it also includes a review from myself.
And you also have access to Chris via Slack chat, so anytime you have a question, you can just kind of reach on out to him and he'll answer as soon as possible. And I think that's one of the exciting aspects of it.
Yeah, it's also just a great community, the Travel Blog Success community as a whole, and then with the video correspondence on it, it's just been great because it's supportive, there's such great conversation going on with it, and you got a lot of good people doing great stuff.
Excellent. I wonder if that is the pause that means it's time for us to go into our tips.
Well, actually, I was just looking it up because I want to find out how much it is and what if our listeners want to take it. I'm at Travel Blog Success.
Yeah.
TravelBlogSuccess.com. I believe it's currently offered for $279.
Let's double check.
We're going to confirm that right now.
Because I think even if you don't have a blog, learning those intro to travel video tips are great. Even for just people who want to document their own vacations or their family travels, they might not have a place to put it, but they're going to like for me sharing it with our family for our Italy trip. That would be something that would be beneficial.
And there should be no apprehension about it because I really tried to gear it so that no matter what level you're starting at, it'll be easy to follow. I think one of the things that bothered me when I was getting into video is there's a lot of like really uber technical talk. Like if you look for information online, you're like, what kind of lens should I use? And you'll get like 400 pages of people being like, well, you want your F to be 0.46. Anyone who doesn't like that's ridiculous. And I just wanted, like, solid, like, ma and pa advice for people, you know?
I hear you.
Sounds like a new brand there and for Captain and Clark. I see. It sounds like a new brand for Captain Clark, Ma and Pa Advice on Travel.
Yeah, yeah, right?
our new podcast, Ma and Pa.
We're rebranding here.
I'll wear a bonnet.
Yeah. Oh, I like it. So our tips, huh? I've been studying for this.
We can start with Jen and give you a chance here to think about it.
All right.
Okay, I've got two tips because as I'm living it right now, I was so excited to get this when I got to Hotel Irvine. They handed me a card. So for our listeners, I've got a little business card here with their Connect and Share. I love it when I don't have to look up a hotel or property's Twitter handle and Instagram. I know not everybody's going to be social media sharing, but for those of us who do, it's so nice to have it hand-delivered to you. But here's the best part. You flip this over, and it says, hit us up. They are available by text. So I've had a personal sort of in-the-moment concierge service by text, and what I've done with it is when I first got here, the Wi-Fi was a little bit confusing to me. You wouldn't think that I'd be confused by Wi-Fi, but I was, and I texted them, and I said, hey, what's up with the free Wi-Fi? And so anyway, they texted me back instructions on how to get on. And then, klutz that I am, I forgot my phone charger. I texted them, so I forgot my phone charger. Any chance you guys have a backup or one that I can borrow or rent or they sell it in the marketplace? Boom, somebody was at my door with a phone charger.
Whoa.
It doesn't stop there. They have a 24-hour marketplace filled with chocolates and local snacks and a wall-sized beverage refrigerator. They've got personal pizzas and nachos and fresh-made sandwiches on ciabatta bread. All of that. You text them what you want, and they bring it up and deliver it. I was so going to do the Ben & Jerry's pint last night, but I was so full that I didn't. And for families, they have coloring books, little stuff for kids. Text them. Bring it up from the marketplace and charge it to your room. I'm blown away. Have you guys heard of hotels doing this before?
No.
No.
Every hotel needs to do this.
That's amazing.
That is incredible. But do they have the Amazon delivery drones? That's the only thing we can put this on a step above.
Well, so we were going down to the car, which I also texted them and said, can you bring my valet up? Here's my number. It was waiting there for me. So I could be the person that's used it the most in the past 24 hours, but you can even use it from the pool to text the pool bar drinks to your cabana.
Oh, my gosh.
Free breakfast, free Wi-Fi, and texting.
We have that same thing, but Tony just texted me. Yeah,
it sounded just like the Sahara camp except for the texting and the Wi-Fi.
Here's the thing. I came for the block party. I didn't even know this. Now, forget the block party. I'm coming back just so I can sit in my room and get served.
You should try to use it when you go home. Just text them and be like, I'd like my pizza now.
Right. Hook my husband up with the Reach Me service.
There you go.
So funny.
Okay, so now my real tip. I mean, my second tip. So you guys were talking about Hawaii, so I just wanted to say that we had such an amazing stay, I think it was a summer ago, at the Kanapali Ali'i, and it's in the Kanapali Resorts. Now, what I wanted to say about this, also very service-friendly, is that they have a grill master service. They have a special chef down at the barbecues, poolside with the beach view right there, and so all the villas have refrigerators in their room, so you stock your fridge, or and they can also help stock your fridge with their concierge service, and then you bring it down when you're ready for the pool to enjoy your dinner by the pool, and they grill it up for you.
What?
Yes. So they have a variety of complimentary, you know, flavor rubs. Ugh. And I think sometimes during the high season, you have to consult with the concierge to book a time. But other than that, they were super capable, and it was just fantastic. I think we had grilled ahi and corn on the cob and grilled pineapple, and it was just such a treat to have someone doing that and to be able to eat your dinner by the pool with the beach view. Just amazing.
Jeez.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it does.
Sign me up.
All right, Chris, back to you.
Okay. Well, my tip doesn't involve room service at all. I may need to think about that.
So, I want to hear about the Sahara, though. Can you tell us about your...
Sure. We had the most odd experiences with that. We actually got on camels for a one-hour camel ride in the northern part of the Moroccan Sahara, so down in southern Morocco, and it was cut short by a thunderstorm.
Oh.
We were on the camels when they were getting basically the lightning and the thunder were coming at the same time, so we retreated to the buildings, which are really not made for rain down there. Strangely enough, the roofs the buildings are made of mud mostly. So basically, in a downpour, now you're in this building that the roof is starting to dissolve onto the floor in pools of mud. But we had a wonderful time. The thing that surprised me with Morocco was the great variety of the landscapes, you know, from the snow-cap high Atlas Mountains to the Sahara Desert, which itself had, you know, here it looks like the moon, here there's acacia trees, here there's great big sand dunes going off for, you know, 10 kilometers in that direction. So that was a big surprise. And then just, you know, stumbling across some nomads and stopping to see how they were living. And our guide had grown up that way. He grew up in basically the same kind of tents that we were seeing. Wow. Very, very, very basic kind of lifestyle. We saw two UNESCO World Heritage Sites, Ait Ben Haddou, which is this great big mud khazar, so a big walled city that's filled with kasbahs, about six different kasbahs or walled mansions basically inside there. There's still 10 families who live there. No power, no electric lights, but they're living just the same way they did 200 years ago. And as you went further south between Ait Ben Haddou and the Sahara, that style of living was still quite common. About half the buildings were built of this great big mud brick about 18 inches thick, which keeps it cool in the heat of the summer, and the rest were concrete construction. So, and then you went from there, but then you went to the coast, and there was a great big modern city with nightclubs and bars, and then we went up to Essaouira, which is this old medieval walled city. It was fascinating. It was wonderful. A couple of people got sick. That was the only downside, but it was a great trip.
How many people were in your tour, and were they all amateur traveler listeners?
11 of us, two relatives, my wife's brother and his wife, two friends from college, and then five listeners from the show.
Cool. So
two of which had been guests actually on the show before on two different occasions. So it was great fun. Well, a wonderful group of people. So, but that's,
and so you do these once a year?
Well, I have done this twice so far. We did it in 2010 to Egypt, just before everything went to hell in Egypt. We were there. And then I took time off because when I went back to work for TripAdvisor, they didn't really want me doing that kind of thing. So we finally decided last year, let's do this again. And I was thinking we would plan something out, you know, a few months, and people just needed... I'm just surprised how much planning some people put into vacation that they really need. Some people said, no, a year out, I can't plan, I need 2 years out. It's like, oh my God.
2 years? Wow.
That they literally have to put in to their work. They have to tell them, I'm going to take time off in 2017 or whatever. So we didn't do that, but we did do a year in advance, and then we're just now starting to plan something for next year. We had a good enough time that we'll probably try and do it again.
Wow. And do you do it, what brand do you do it through?
Well, I could mention the brand. So, no, we did it with Intrepid. I have generally told Intrepid that if they wanted me to advertise it as an Intrepid trip run, you know, with Amateur Traveler, that would be some sponsorship revenue. So I haven't generally been advertising it that way. But everybody who was on the trip knew they were on a trip with Intrepid. We had a guide that they had provided, and all of the booking went through them, and they were doing the real work because I don't speak Arabic. I don't speak the Berber language, whose name escapes me at the moment, which is what you needed to speak in some of these areas. And, you know, we really needed someone who actually knew what they were doing. So,
fair enough.
So, yeah, good fun. Good fun. Actually, my tip is going to be in a completely different direction, but maybe I'll save that for next time. So my tip is South Morocco. And especially, I'm going to say the two cities, the two UNESCO World Heritage Sites of Ait Ben Haddou and Essaouira. Essaouira is one of those words that has every vowel. So Essaouira. Both of those wonderful. And if you look at my photos are up already, travelphotos.amateurtraveler.com, you can see quite a few pictures of southern Morocco.
Awesome. Well,
and Chris, where do you go to learn how to pronounce things correctly? As you know, I struggle with that. Where?
Oh, the easiest thing is you don't, but you say them with confidence. That's my No, I'm hoping that I'm pronouncing those things correctly, but basically just listening to the guide and making sure that I'm saying them the way that he is saying them. But there are certainly some things. So my father spoke Danish. My grandfather spoke Danish, and he used to describe that Danish wasn't actually a language. It was a throat ailment. If you spoke Danish, but you know, you took something, it would clear right up. And there are times that Arabic has that same sort of sound, like, you know, someone is going to spit on you as they're trying to say that word. So I don't know that I am saying things entirely accurate. And then obviously we had quite a lot of French in the country, classic Arabic, and then also the language of the Berber people, who make up about half the population. So we had three different languages being thrown at us at any given time. Wow. So I don't guarantee that I'm pronouncing things absolutely correctly, but I am pronouncing them the way I heard our guide say them.
All right. Sorry to out you. It sounded perfect to me.
I know.
So, Chris and Tawny, what are your tips for our listeners?
Well, speaking of you saying that you now just had your photos up from your trip,
we are going to recommend that you go out and get an iFi card. I think we're a little late to the game with this one. People have been doing them for a while. But it's iFi, EYE-FI, and it's essentially an SD card that plugs into whatever camera you're using that uses an SD card. But it has a weak Wi-Fi signal that allows you to take the pictures from your DSLR or your point-and-shoot and beam them directly to your mobile device.
So, I mean, what's exciting about this is, you know, our DSLR takes much better quality pictures than our iPhones do. So I've been on trips where people have uploaded these amazing pictures to Instagram that they just took, and I'm like, how did you do that? It's because they were using iFi cards. So, I mean, to tie this all in, for those that are getting frisky at the pyramids and they want to be able to upload that stuff right away, I mean, problem solved, my friends.
And nope. Then you can use your full-on telephoto zoom and then put it on Instagram straight away.
No grainy footage for you.
Oh, no.
We did promise extra points for the tip if it tied into what we've been talking about. So, point Tawny.
So that's our most recent purchase that we found to be extremely excited about. And we're going to be using it when we're traveling Europe. So you'll be able to get better quality pictures immediately as we travel around,
which is just so useful.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, I've had an iFi card long enough that I don't even remember where it is anymore. I've had it for 5 years or something like that. But at the time I got it was pre-smartphones. And at that point you were just using it to directly upload to Facebook or something like that, and I found I didn't use it that much. So it's interesting that they've sort of got a new lease on life with the tying together the two devices. And did you want to bring one tip for us today, or one each?
Oh, shoot.
That was technically mine, so you're on your own.
Oh, that's not fair.
Destination
tip. Okay, let's see.
Oh, you have yours.
What is it?
Croatia.
Oh, okay. So I saw recently, we're big Game of Thrones fans, but they posted on Facebook this amazing video of them shooting in Croatia, and Croatia is one of my favorite places in all of the world. So my suggestion is to get there now before it goes crazy and blows up, because one of the reasons why I love Croatia so much is because it's very inexpensive, and with the way that the euro is, like, there's no reason not to go. And it's just a gorgeous place with the most amazing food and people, and we would probably live there if we could.
We might, actually. We're still young.
Yes, you are.
And for Game of Thrones fans, Ait Ben Haddou, that I was just mentioning, is the destination used for Yunkai and Pentos in the Game of Thrones.
Really?
What?
We need to put a map together, because I've been trying to trace them all. Because you've got, like, King's Landing and Dubrovnik, pretty much everything for the Wall and north of that's up in Iceland. And then now I'm just discovering this. So, like,
and then Essaouira, the other place that I mentioned, is used for Astapor in Game of Thrones.
What?
I will put up a link that I found for 38 amazing Game of Thrones pictures and where they were taken for the scenes for these particular destinations. What is filling in. So it's from Skyscanner, actually.
Awesome. Oh. Yeah, that's what we need.
Yes.
I had to look it up because, you know, I don't have HBO, so I've only seen the first season of Game of Thrones, so I didn't remember where it was taking the place of.
Spoiler alert, it gets crazy.
It was pretty crazy already at that point.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, with that, where can people find you on the internets?
CaptainandClark.com.
And then that's pretty much our handle for everything, so Captain and Clark, Twitter, Instagram,
Viewfinder.expedia.com/CaptainandClark.
Boom.
And sometimes Periscope.
We've talked about this before, but we didn't make you define why you are captain on this show, and I feel that we are remiss to our listeners because they have not heard this story.
This is my favorite thing to do. remind people that while it is just a charming nickname, it is also a U.S. Coast Guard certified title that denotes the fact that I had enough sea time sailing the world to apply for my six-pack license, which allows me to sail anything up to 150 tons.
Wow.
And do you indeed have a six-pack still?
Well, I'm not going to lift up my shirt right now. Yeah, and no, I am still licensed. I could
take
people
out
of water.
That Captain and Clark, do you think it has more lasting power than your previous partnership with Tennille?
You know, yes. Although we still have a very strong following in the 70s.
Just check. Jen, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at JenLeo, Instagram at VegasJenLeo, and on Meerkat and Periscope as JenLeo.
Excellent.
And also on the LA Times travel section.
I am Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. The most recent Amateur Traveler that just came out was a domestic episode talking about the Tennessee Valley from Chattanooga to Huntsville, Tennessee. Civil War history all the way to rockets. You can find out more about that at amateurtraveler.com or check out my Instagram. My Instagram is not Amateur Traveler. It's Chris2X, as is my main Twitter account, and you'll see pictures there from Morocco. With that, thank you all for coming and listening to us, and we hope that you will get out there and travel, that you will have a wonderful time. Please don't be carving your initials in anything, and less buffoonery and more travel.